It's showtime, folks!
Ooh, so this is the thanks I get for working overtime.
Overtime!
It is Wednesday, my dudes. Welcome into the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, a fan-run radio. It's another edition of Overtime, clocking in after 6 o'clock here on your Wednesday evening. Happy hump day to all. I'm joined in here by, well, two guys who are just got done pulling some production duty for the drive. They're sticking around to do a double shift, basically, here. I got John Tyler to my left, and I have Hayden Wallen, who's up in the producer's perch. Guys, appreciate you sticking around for two more hours here. John, you're not doing VR, are you?
Yeah, actually, Hayden and I both are. Hayden's going to produce it. Me and Russ are.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's going to be. It's a good day. I mean, we're going to watch the game and listen to VR anyway, so we might as well hang around and talk about it.
We're already here, men. So.
Yeah.
Real company men, you two are.
I mean, we get paid so much to do it, so.
That's why the Godfather shells out the big bucks. Is for you to pull shifts like this.
Yeah.
Hell, you're more harder working than, you know, coal miners, harder working than, I don't know, give me some dangerous jobs. I wasn't about to say the troops.
Fishing in the North Pacific, like the deadliest catch, those deadliest catch guys. That's dangerous, right?
It is very dangerous, actually. There's been a lot of people die on that show, right?
I don't know. I don't watch
they
it.
Yeah, go overboard.
Well,
I've
only
seen it once, and it happened that episode.
Wow. Perfect.
Good episode, perfect. Yeah.
What a great episode to watch, though.
Yeah.
Someone died.
They all lived happily ever after and caught a bunch of tuna.
Did they try to get him? They just left him in the ocean?
I don't know if you can.
I think you're just like.
We lost another one.
With the cold, icy water raging like that, I don't think it's possible to rescue someone like that, right?
I mean, the boats are going so fast, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yikes. That's crazy, right?
Don't they get paid like a whole lot of money to do that though? Because it's dangerous.
Oh yeah, they get paid it's six figures to do that.
I kind of know him personally, but this is a guy. He lives in Florida now, but it was like a year or two ago. He actually went to Alaska to work on an oil rig.
Nice.
He only did for a little because it's such a hard job. I mean, you get paid a whole lot, but you also have to live in a small village in Alaska. So.
Yeah, I get you. My cousin went to Alaska for like 6 months and worked in a fish cannery.
Really?
This is also a guy that will like just disappear and 3 months later will show up and be like, yeah, I was doing the Appalachian Trail by myself. Like, okay.
Very safe.
All right, Seth.
I didn't tell anyone.
Yeah, I'm just going to go. Just me and my dog and it's amazing.
What the hell was going to be the plan if he just, like, you know, God forbid, went missing up there? No one knew he was up there. He was just going to be missing.
Just gone. Just gone, I guess. I don't know. He's fantastic.
That's terrifying.
He met his wife in the cannery, though, and she's from Poland. She's a lovely lady.
Young Polish lady. Women, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. They fit well. They're really good together, though. He's hilarious. Cool.
I'm just trying to think, like, my idea of, like, a Polish woman. I can't think.
Blonde. You know, thin blonde. Because it's there's the you know Swede, Finnish, Polish,
more like Slavic though. So I
a little
like,
more.
I think of like more brunette.
Yeah, she's blonde though. Blonde, like a brownish blonde. Blonde,
makes
fair skin. You know, could probably murder you really easily, and make you disappear.
Those Polish people are tough. They have been through a whole lot, so I could see that. I could definitely see that though. Would you rather work in a fish cannery or somewhere in Fayetteville, Arkansas though?
Same thing. They both smell like fish, probably.
I had to find a way to segue into this. Yes, because Tennessee basketball, 8:30, they're out there in Vietnam.
It's happening.
About to take on the Hogs, round two in the regular season. Last time these two faced off, I mean, just remember it, guys. It wasn't that long ago. We walked away from that one being like, okay, maybe this could be something that gets this team to turn a corner. This is the first time since the when you played Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, that you were able to build a lead against an SEC opponent and just keep it that way. Just keep your foot on that accelerator. Mm-hmm. You completely dominated Arkansas. You were able to get to the rim, get to the free throw line at will. Ended up winning by 21. So definitely you have for all the ups and downs of this season, one of your most positive performances has come against this Arkansas team. You're going out to Fayetteville, though. They have Isaiah Joe back. Mm-hmm. He is a big-time threat to drain a bunch of threes on you. You still have to be concerned about Mason Jones, especially with all the explosive performances that he has had. It's going to be a tougher task to take down this Arkansas team this time, of course. I mean, even if they didn't have Isaiah Joe back from injury yet, going on the road is always going to be tough. I mean, just backtrack to Saturday, guys. You had a 17-point lead at Auburn, but things happened. That home crowd got into it, and then all of a sudden, yeah, we're handed a big fat L. It's very hard to win on the road. This is the first time we're going to see this Tennessee team since blowing the lead at Auburn. Guys, I don't know how you're feeling inside about this one here, just if you have any type of feeling about this game here. I don't have a strong feeling necessarily, but at the same time, I'm thinking, why should I expect anything really positive on the road tonight? Because I don't.
History would say that we won't win this game because we've only won four times in Fayetteville. 97, 03... The last time was 09. We've only won four times. They're 10-4 against us when we play it in Fayetteville.
Wait, well, in Fayetteville all time or in Bud Walton Arena? Because
Bud Walton Arena. Okay. They're 10-4 against us.
Not that makes it better, but I was like, oh, that'd be something if we just only won four times in Fayetteville, period. But Bud Walton, how old is Bud Walton?
I don't know.
It was like in the mid-90s, I think. But still, only four times since then is pretty bad.
And it's been 11 years since we beat them there. So
that's pretty bad.
And we've had some great teams since then.
SEC championship team, if you remember, that one opened up the SEC schedule there. Mm-hmm. You had, what was it, like an 8-point lead with like 2 points?
Yeah, and
ago,
they
lose in overtime.
Yeah, that was a really close game. And I mean, even the Bruce years, Konzo years, the couple teams we had that were really good still couldn't beat them there. Granted, they had better teams then too, but if history repeats itself tonight, it's not going to be a good ending for the Vols. But again, you never know what team's going to show up, right? And you don't know how the refs are going to be. And the dude that's back, Joe,
yeah.
His first game back against Missouri, he had 5 threes. Which we're a pretty good defensive team. I'll have a stat here. Go ahead and talk, and I'll find the stat that I have about our 3-point defense.
Well, even though that the history of Bud Walton's not kind here, what you do have to hope for is just the fact that, well, this Arkansas team is still not good. You look at their overall record, 17-10, and you might think, okay, it depends what the wins, what the wins were, and that's either bubble team or they might be still projected to be in the field. And they were up until, I think when we last played them, Lenardi had them as a 9 seed. It's gotten a whole lot worse for them since then. When they beat Missouri, as you were referring to, John, that snapped a 5-game losing streak for Arkansas. Ever since they started out 12-1, I think they're 5-9 since then. They have hit a big rough patch. It really starts with the fact that they can't defend anybody worth the crap, especially on the interior. They are, I'll find the exact stat here. They're in the 340s at defending the rim.
Yeah, interior, they are not very good. Defensively, in terms of guarding the three-point line, they're really good. So there have been 9 games where they've given up 30% or more higher three-point percentage. And in those games, they're 3-6, and one of those games was against Tennessee. When on offensive end, when Arkansas hits 10 threes, they're 6-1.
Wow. Okay. So game plans should be pretty straightforward then, right? You try to replicate exactly what worked for you the first time. That is just, hey, if they've not improved at all on their interior, just try to make life living hell for them in the paint. Still try to get to the charity stripe here. But you have to do your best to guard that perimeter when you're on defense, because you have to worry about Isaiah Joe first and foremost trying to hit a bunch of threes, because he's taken 222 three-point attempts this season. He's going to take a whole lot of them. Now, that might not mean he hits a whole lot of them. He's just going to try his best. Mason Jones, obviously, if you kept up with him this season, he's averaging 20.5 points per game. You would think that he may still be in the running to get consideration for SEC Player of the Year just because of the types of explosive performances he has had. He did not have a great game shooting-wise against Tennessee the first time around. You have to worry about him constantly driving to the rim as well, because that's what he's going to do first and foremost. So you have those two guys to worry about first and foremost. Obviously, is it Stills or Seals, the other guy?
I think it's Seals, S-I.
He's a playmaker. They have playmakers other than Joe and Jones, of course, but that's going to be the first two you have to worry about. I mean, outside of that, I don't know what to analyze about this other than Tennessee on offense, do the exact same thing you did last time and hope you have the same amount of success, because you had just an extremely efficient night on offense. But as we know, it's probably not going to go exactly like that. I would expect Arkansas to put up a much tougher fight this time. I would expect this to be a whole lot more intense than the 21-point cruising to victory it was last time.
Definitely. Hayden, what do you think about tonight?
Well, last time we played this game, I also did the I think I did overtime last time we played. Me and you and AJ did the Arkansas pregame.
Oh, yeah.
And me and AJ both picked, like, Arkansas to cover, which was like Tennessee was favored by 4, which is
similar
actually,
tonight
Arkansas 4.5. So I called it completely wrong the first time, but nobody anticipated Mason Jones to go 1-9.
Yeah, he went
like that, something
yeah
crazy.
He didn't even start that game either.
They never said why that was either.
I think he might have been like him back talking to coaches.
A little bit of disciplinary thing.
Jones went, I'll get his exact, 1 of 10 from the field, 1 of 5 from 3, but he did get to the foul line, get 6 points. So he finished with 9, which is.
So he did pretty good.
Well below his average.
Yeah, that's probably best game that I've watched this year, one of my favorite games besides the first half of the Auburn game. But.
Boy, always had the first half.
Yeah, the first half. But going back to 2 years ago when we went out there, when, that's probably one of my all-time favorite Grant Williams plays, was when he got that steal and took it all the way down the court and dunked it one-handed. Top 10 on that one. So, we usually lose out there, but last time we were out there, one of the best plays. We lost last time, didn't we?
It's been 11 years.
It was overtime, lost the last time it was out there. And Who the hell they have on that team? They have like a bunch of really good shooters on that team.
And a big post guy.
Daniel Gafford.
Gafford, yes, yeah.
Was he the post guy?
Number 10, yes.
Yeah.
He got 6'11", drafted, I believe. Foot. Yes.
They don't – I will tell you this about Arkansas. The reason they're so bad at interior defense, the tallest guy they have is 6'8".
Yeah.
So they don't have a lot of length. So that's something you can take advantage of here.
Hopefully.
I'll go ahead and mention this too. You should be able to also whatever the result of the game is, Tennessee should still be able to win the day on the boards, especially offensively. They just don't crash the glass a whole lot. So you can take advantage of that. That's another reason why you were able to have such success on the interior last time, is that even when you weren't converting at the rim, you had like almost 40% offensive rebound rate somewhere in that neighborhood. So it just made it so easy for you. On the rebounding end, you actually out-rebound them total 40-29 here. You had 11 offensive rebounds. They actually had 11, too, but still yet. That came at a time, if you guys remember, we were kind of getting out-rebounded by almost every team that Tennessee played.
Yeah.
And then you finally had a good night on the boards, and you see what that translated to. Last performers here, you have Viscovi was a leader. That was his 20.8 assist night. Bowden. Had that big first half. He finished with 16. Pons had 12. Fulkerson had 14 points, 8 rebounds. And a guy I'm interested to see what impact he has at all tonight. Your big performer off the bench, really your only decent performer off the bench last time, Olivier Kamwa. 10 points, 6 rebounds. Added in some good plays on the defensive end as well. What's going to happen with him? Gaines also had a good game too. My bad.
This is a game where Kamwa is going to do well because he's not going up against really athletic big players, big post players. And if you think back, the games he's done well, it's when he's gone up against players that aren't super athletic. He's more athletic than them.
Gaines and Kamwa got a ton of run the last time we played. I think they both got over 20 minutes.
Conwell had 19, and Gaines had 26, so yeah, you were pretty much right.
I bet Gaines can play a lot tonight just because of the way he played against Auburn as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that Arkansas game is the game where we started seeing Gaines more. We've been seeing him as far as the
– rightfully so.
First rotation off the bench has been him and usually Conwell. So yeah.
We will pick this back up on the other side here. We'll talk a little bit more about this one. Again, 8:30 tip-off tonight, SEC Network. I'm just glad it's not a 9 o'clock tip-off. I'm so glad it's not a 9 o'clock tip-off. I feel like 8:30.
It's going to go to overtime now that you said that.
Yeah, you can blame me. You just go ahead and blame me for jinxing it then. Pick up this conversation when we come back here. Got a good show for you, filled a whole bunch of other topics we're going to touch on. Lucas Panzeca, 104.5 The Zone, is going to join us at 6:30, by the way. Talk about NFL Combine stuff, a little bit of Tennessee basketball, and also it's an exciting time out there in Nashville if you are a soccer fan. Nashville SC about to get things started in the MLS, so we will pick his brain about all that 6:30. But when we come back with more overtime, we will talk more about Tennessee, Arkansas tonight. Stick with us here on Fan Run Radio. Back in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios, about a little over 2 hours away from tip-off out there in Fayetteville. Guys, I'm going to open up the floor for this question here. With tonight being the first game since you blew it against Auburn, and you're back on the road once again, is a type of motivated bounce-back performance more likely, or is a sloppy performance more likely?
That's a good question.
Sloppy.
Because, again, we're on the road. Arkansas is not good, though. They're just not. And it's almost like with this SEC especially, this SEC outside of your top, what, four teams, they've really been cannibalizing each other.
Auburn, LSU, Kentucky, Florida. Or Kentucky, Auburn, LSU, Kentucky.
Kentucky's on Florida. Top, so first place. And then you have really Auburn, three. LSU, and then
Florida's 9-3, I believe, or 8-4.
I feel like you've got those three, and then you've got Florida.
Something like that.
Florida's number four right now is all I know.
But, yeah, outside of that top four, it's just been a big hodgepodge here. Yeah. So it's really unpredictable kind of here, but I don't know. What do you all feel is more likely here? Because usually if you have the bad taste of a loss in your mouth like that, you would expect an inspired performance. But sometimes it's just, well, especially at this point in the season, set to 15-12, how inspired can this roster be?
Depends on the kind of practices Rick's put them through, I think. If Rick has just worn them down, like tough practices, then I would be more worried about a lackluster performance. Or did he take the approach of, all right, it's not that we're not conditioned, it's that I didn't call a bleeping timeout when I was supposed to. And let's work on the little things. Let's work on the ball handling. Let's work on our offense, which I'm sure they didn't do any of that. I'm sure it was he wore them down. I think the first 60 seconds of the game, we'll be able to see what kind of game it's going to be. Think about the coming back out of halftime of the Auburn game. What was the first thing that happened?
Well, you got a five-second call.
And what did that – what I mean, that kind of set the tone. Granted, we extended the lead.
But that tone was set, though.
The tone was set. And you have to imagine, this after the season, we're so young, the first thing went through their mind is, oh, crap, here we go again. And if you watch it back, after Auburn makes that first three of the second half, you see Bowden kind of slump his shoulders and, like, drop his head like, here we go. Here it comes. It's going to happen. Which reminds me a lot of a Tennessee football team a few years ago who just knew that as soon as something bad happened, it's over. And that's kind of what I feel like, because Bowden is a senior, but he's not leading that team. He's not the voice. Fulkerson's not the voice. There's not a voice. And so there's no one to say, snap out of it. Everything's fine. Rick's the only one going to do that. But there's got to be someone on the floor. That would have been Lamonte.
you wouldn't expect this team, especially you just already rattled off the names of Bowden and Fulkerson. I mean, it's kind of shocking to me that they would have that type of mindset given what they've been through over the course of the last few seasons. Think about all the holes they've had to dig themselves out of, even like on the road. This team has played in so many hostile environments. They have had to overcome so much adversity.
This season?
Over the past few seasons, like the teams Bowden and Fulkerson have been on. But
the problem is they're not the leaders of the team.
That's the thing.
That's the problem.
Has that really been one of like the main problems all season, is the fact that, yes, it's unfortunate that Lamonte's health impacted things right in the middle of everything, and then, hey, all of this load as far as like being a leader at the guard position had to fall on Jordan Bowden's shoulders, because even though he does have some help in the backcourt with Descovy, the guy's just 18 years old. He just got to the Northern Hemisphere a couple months ago, so you can't put that all on him. It's just Jordan Bowden's had to been he's been thrusted from the fourth guy at best on the previous seasons to, you're supposed to be the guy. We're looking at you to be the guy. I thought he did a good job of responding to as a performance against Auburn. Had a career high. I can't hark on Bowden that much what he did against Auburn, but that is a good point, though, about the body language.
Yeah.
It tells a whole lot.
And I've said on the drive all week is when the team gets a big lead, it's like they know something's going to happen, and whenever the team comes back, like against Auburn, what happens to our offense? It goes to crap because they get tight, they get nervous, no one wants to shoot the ball, no one wants to take possession of the ball, they just dribble around, they look for Fulkerson, and if it's not there, they just throw it around the key, and no one wants to take the shot, and because they're afraid of messing up. They're afraid of messing up the lead or messing up and the team extending their lead more, and that's because they're all so young. I mean, and there's no voice. Jalen Johnson, I've never heard the dude talk ever. Bowden, Fulkerson, they're not vocal people. Fulkerson's he's the goofy guy. He's not the get-in-your-face like Grant and Admiral were. They're the get-in-your-face, tell you how to do it right, and show you how to do it right. Those three guys are your leaders. Everyone else are freshmen.
Yeah.
They're all freshmen, and there's two ways a freshman can go. They can go of they're oblivious because they don't know any better, and so they're just going to fight through it, or they're going to look at those guys who are the leaders, quote-unquote, the upperclassmen, and take their lead. And because they're backing off, the freshmen start backing off.
I think Fulkerson's intensity can really inspire some people, but you do have a point about the fact that he's not going to be like the, hey, huddle up and listen to me lead the way type guy.
Right.
There's no doubt that he plays an intensity. He gets fired up all the time, but how does that translate into a leadership type of mentality?
Right.
And, John, when you were talking just about this stagnant offense at sometimes when you're trying to hold on to the lead, I was thinking about what Barnes said immediately after a game about why he didn't call the timeout, and it almost makes me think like he might have had a point, but he still should call
timeout. There's more reasons to call a timeout than just to get your guys to run a set play correctly, right? You got to stop the momentum.
He had to stop that bleeding, so
correct.
That he did not do it.
Right, and he didn't do it. And like I get, you want your players to play through it. Bruce did that a lot when he's there. He would want his guys to play through it, but if they didn't, he would call a timeout. I'm not getting the Bruce thing, but other coaches do that. Konzo did that a lot, where he let them play through for a little bit, but then was like, okay, yeah, this isn't.
Is playing through all the time like a real like coaching strategy? Like I hear that all the time. I'm like, what the hell does that actually do if you do that all the time and if your guys aren't responding?
Not with our team, it shouldn't be, because they're all so stinking young. They're all so young, they don't know what to do, and that's a crazy environment at Auburn. That was a crazy environment, unlike any of the others in the SEC. They're right on top of you. The students are literally all around the court. And so you've got to stop them and talk to them. The other thing is, I feel like Rick's got a quick trigger finger when it comes to pulling guys out of the game. Mm-hmm. You set Folky with two fouls for the whole first half. Granted, we didn't need him. We were doing fine the first half.
You looked a lot better without him in that first half, honestly.
Exactly. Here's the lineup that worked for us against Auburn. The Scovey, Pons, Devontae, Bowden, and Gaines.
Yes.
That's when we went on our first half run.
We said Devontae and Gaines. Who was the other one?
Pons, Vescovi, Bowden, Jalen Johnson, and Devontae Gaines.
Yes.
That's when we went on our big run in the first half, and it worked because we were running. As soon as Vescovi came out, Jalen and Triple J came in, that offense went to crap.
Triple J can't handle the damn ball worth the crap.
He's not a point guard.
It's hard to watch.
He's not a point guard, friends.
It's weird because like he's a very like passive guy and he can get his teammates involved. But
that's
he's
the
just,
problem.
He's not a ball handler.
He's a passive guy who doesn't know what to do with the ball. He can't be creative. He doesn't know how to be creative. Plus, he's hurt.
Yes. Friend of the station, Will Warren, he had a very like Nostradamus type of tweet like right before the final couple minutes of the game. He said, this is the type of game where Josiah James does not need to be in. What happens? He's in and he commits a very devastating turnover.
Like, I was screaming at the TV to take him out of the ball game. It's like and at one point he got a rebound, an offensive rebound. And he literally just turns around and stands there.
He got ripped away from him.
And the ball, and it's like his brain just shuts off. He doesn't know what to do.
He got alphaed bad.
It was embarrassing. It's embarrassing. He doesn't need. I know we need depth, but he needs to be. And Russ has said it on the drive. He needs to be like a Dame Bradshaw, where he is a mismatch for a post player. He could play the four and be a great mismatch. He doesn't need to be running the offense.
I'll ask you this before we give quick predictions here and head to break, because we got to get to Lucas Panzeca after our next break here. But that's interesting. Now that we're talking about Triple J, it's just made me think. For him to be more of a mismatch, do you think that's just going to have to be something that comes with getting more pieces on your roster next season?
Like a mismatch in terms of going down low, playing a post position?
I mean, just having a deeper bench and like a more talented roster to work with to get him in that position is what I'm saying. Is this just a factor of us not having a lot of pieces to work with?
I think if this team was next year's team, let's say all these guys came in next year and we have the pieces with Johnson and Springer and all those guys and Walker, then I feel like you wouldn't see Kamwa. He'd be redshirting. Pember would be redshirting, and Devontae would be redshirting. You wouldn't see any of those guys.
Torture Pember.
I think you might still stay with Gaines.
Devontae is man, and I've been on the Devontae bandwagon for months.
He just has to get muscle.
He's got to gain some weight and get some muscle, but dude, he creates havoc on defense.
Scrappy as hell.
Yeah, and he plays hard. He would have fit into with last year's team perfectly, the way he plays.
Yeah, absolutely here. Well, we're about to hit a break. We'll get to Lucas Panzeca on the other side. Before we go to break, though, a couple things. First, I want to give a quick fall baseball update. Bottom of the seventh, Pete Durke. Oh, man, he rips one into center field, gets an RBI double. Tennessee extends its lead over UNC Asheville in the bottom of the seventh to 12-0.
Coach your team, meat stick.
Absolute massacre of the Bulldogs. Asheville's a fine town, though. It was just their Sunday. But I'm sorry you had to be fed to the slaughterhouse, UNC Asheville. Okay, guys, before we go, and just so we don't forget to circle back around to at the end of the show, I want to go ahead and get your predictions for tonight's matchup. What do you think happens? Tennessee, 4.5-point dogs in Fayetteville. Whoever wants to go first, go.
You go, Hayden. You want me to go?
I don't even need like an exact
ahead and go.
Score.
I'm looking at my ESPN Plus prediction.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh. I will use my own brain. Let's go Tennessee 74, Razorbacks 63. It's a close, but then free throws at the end kind of pull it out.
I like the optimism. Okay, I'll go ahead and go next here.
Why not?
I tell you what, this is just going to be, just because I think it's going to be like the opposite of what happened the first time, I'm thinking this one does come down to the wire. But because here's the thing, but I don't think Tennessee jumps out to a lead, so you don't have the time in the game to really panic and try to play conservative. I think this one stays close pretty much the entire second half.
That's a great point. Maybe that's what Tennessee has to have.
That's what happens when you want Alabama.
Yeah, you gotta keep it close.
You didn't have a big lead against South Carolina, but you had a lead that you could have put away at the end of the game. It's
John, your prediction difference. Would hit the over by 1 point.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
Over under 136.
Maybe I need to get on my bookie.
Okay, with all that being said for me, I'm going to be a sheep. Tennessee 68, Arkansas 66.
Yeah.
Hayden.
GBO,
it's
baby.
On you.
He's going to go Arkansas. I can see it in his face.
See it too.
He looks. Yeah, you can call him the Hogs.
Well, we've seen it both this year where we came out and played good after a big game in the last Arkansas game, but we've also seen where we played terrible after a big game, like the Kansas game. After the Kansas game,
what game was that? It doesn't
matter. A&M, I think.
A&M, yeah. And then we saw with Cincinnati and Memphis too. Mm-hmm. I don't think Arkansas is very good. I never thought they were very good, so I'm gonna go Tennessee. 71, Arkansas 60.
Yeah.
68.
Yeah.
Bah, take it. We're all sheepy here.
Take that, hogs.
We're all feeling very woolly here.
Take that.
I do believe that's Lucas Pansy calling in. As soon as Hayden gets him on hold, we will get to him on the other side. I mean, got NFL Scouting Combine going on up in Indy now. We will talk to Lucas about Vols in the Combine. Also, since he's out there in Nashville, we're of course going to talk to him about some Titans prospects that are in the Combine right now. Talk to him a little bit about Vols hoops and Nashville SC as well. Big time out in the mid-state if you are a soccer fan. We will talk to Lucas on the other side. You're listening to Overtime on Fan Run Radio. Back at the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios here, we're pleased to be joined by our usual Wednesday evening guest here out in Nashville. He works with 104.5 The Zone, FallsWire.com. He does play-by-play for WDKN Radio out in Dixon as well. And he's doing a new writing venture, writing about some Nashville SC soccer. It's the one and only Lucas Panzica, who is joining us again here on Overtime. Lucas, good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you guys. How's it going?
Hey, man, going pretty well. Going pretty well. Cannot complain out here. Lucas, man, a lot to I want to ask you about here. So let's go ahead and get into it. Of course, we are right in the middle of the NFL Scouting Combine up there in Indianapolis. A lot of Tennessee-related storylines to always follow in the Combine. Of course, for Tennessee Volunteers football, you have the five players who were invited up there: Juwan James, Marquez Callaway, Dominic Wood, Anderson, Daniel Batuli, and Daryl Taylor. Now, Daryl Taylor not working out due to recovery from off-season surgery. You're also having certain guys not doing some certain workouts like the bench press, the 40, and some things of that nature. And also, of course, for Tennessee Titans fans, maybe some prospects that they have their eyes on for the upcoming NFL draft they're going to keep their eyes on as well. But, Lucas, I'll start by asking you about the Vols that are up there in Indy right now. I've asked this to guys on my show earlier this week. Out of all the guys participating, doing the most workouts in the Combine this week, who do you think's going to have the best showing? And of that same token, I'll also ask you, who do you think has the most to prove?
Well, most approved physically in terms of combine numbers. When you think about the 40-yard dash, the vertical, all those variables, I think it is Juwan Jennings, even though when it comes to putting on the film tape, his stuff probably jumps out more than any other wide receiver, or I won't say any other wide receiver, most other wide receivers in this draft class. But if I had to pick a Vol to go in there and kind of open the eyes of NFL scouts the most, I would say it's Daryl Taylor. Obviously, he's not making it with the injury, so I'm going to stick with Marquez Callaway. And just in terms of the measurables, you know, this is the season where we get into hand size and all the things that don't matter as much as just throwing on the tape and seeing what these guys actually did on the field. Juwan Jennings probably has a disadvantage when it comes to that. So I'll say Marquez Callaway. I think he'll open the most eyes. Maybe he was a little bit overshadowed by Juwan throughout this past season and really throughout his Tennessee career. So I'll go with him, but I'll also note that I think it's strange that Nigel Warrior wasn't invited to this thing. The way he came on late in the year is one of the best safeties in the SEC East. I mean, he was a huge strength for Tennessee in that defensive back group, that especially at the second half of the year. I think Tennessee allowed less plays of 30 or more yards in the air than any other team in the SEC, and a lot of that started with him. So I think it's a shame he did not get an invite, but he'll have a chance to prove himself at Pro Day. But, yeah, to answer your question, man, I worry about Juwan Jennings at these kinds of events, although I do think he will kill it in the interviews.
Going to Dominic Wood Anderson here. Now, this is a guy who, in his 2 years after JUCO at Tennessee, you look at his stats. I mean, he doesn't have the stats that really make your eyes pop out, but, I mean, he had a much efficient senior season than he did in his 2018 season. with him just having, I think, the size and the stature to his advantage, and he did get this combine invite as well. I mean, kind of surprised me. I mean, going back to Nigel Warrior, I thought Warrior would have been the one to get an invite over DWA, but you do have Wood Anderson up there. How much do you think Dominic Wood Anderson can impress these scouts, not only combine, but also pro day in April? Could we see Dominic Wood Anderson maybe get drafted?
Man, I'd be surprised, and I'm with you. I was surprised Dominic Wood Anderson got invited to the combine. I guess you love those measurables, you know, 6'4", 257. He really came on as a blocker. And you, throughout his 2 years at Tennessee, you kept hearing the staff saying, we need to get him the ball more. It sounded like there was a concerted effort to put the ball in his hands. But like you said, Tanner, I mean, the stats don't jump off the page. I was a little bit surprised that he did get the invite. To be drafted, I would not expect that from Wood Anderson, but there's no doubt I think he'll find a home. I think all these guys from Tennessee can find a home, including Nigel Warrior, who was not invited to Indy, whether it's undrafted or not. If you ask me who has the biggest likelihood of actually getting picked, man, I'm going to say Juwan Jennings, really, because when he sits down one-on-one with the team, I don't know how you can't love the guy and his demeanor. And then when you throw on the tape and see what he was able to do throughout the regular season, throughout his entire career, breaking more tackles than anybody else in the league at that spot. I think he has the highest likelihood of getting drafted when it's all said and done.
Speaking with Lucas Panseco, 104.5 The Zone, and man, anytime we talk about the Titans now that since the season has ended, a lot of it has been about the needs when the draft comes up here. Titans have the 29th pick as it stands right now in the first round. I mean, who knows what happens on draft day? Maybe the Titans tried to trade up, try to get a higher pick, and I mean, we will see what happens when all draft day is said and done once we can grade all these players for their positions of need. But sticking with the combine now, man, for what the Titans need on the team, I mean, we've talked about edge rusher, we've talked about cornerback. Now maybe you look at getting a pretty good offensive lineman in regards to whatever is going on with Jack Conklin as well. With all these positions to keep an eye on for Titans fans, who are some players that fans should keep an eye out on in the combine?
Well, I'll probably reiterate what I said to you guys last week. I mean, and the more I've looked at it, the more I narrow it down to these two guys out of the SEC West with Terrell Lewis from Alabama and Kalavon Chaisson from LSU. I think Chaisson probably has a bigger shot to get taken earlier. Maybe Lewis is the more likely option. And he didn't have, you know, the biggest numbers. I think 6 sacks, just 11 and a half tackles for loss, but 6'5", 252 pounds. And I think they're going to take a pass rusher in the first round. I'll be shocked if they don't. And they don't need a guy to come in and take over that spot. I think the Titans just need somebody to come in and compliment Harold Landry, who they took about 2 years ago. He took a step forward in 2019 with 9 sacks. He went from 4 sacks to 9. It just didn't really feel like he took that big step forward because of how much that was lacking for the Titans. And a lot of that had to, late in the season at least, and a lot of that had to do with injuries to Cam Wake, to DeAndre Walker, who they drafted a year ago. So I'm sticking with those two guys, man, especially for the combine when you're really looking for those players that you expect your team to draft in the earlier rounds, those guys that get the invites, Terrell Lewis and Kalavon Chaisson. I expect one of those two guys, even though it's early, to be a Titan in late April and just come in and compliment Harold Landry as an edge rusher that this team desperately needs.
Okay, switching to offense now, and this is something I didn't know if I'd be talking to you about this soon here, but with Mike Vrabel's comments this week, I got to ask you about quarterback, man, and about just the uncertainty if Ryan Tannehill will be the Titans starting quarterback for this upcoming season here. Should Titans fans keep an eye on guys like, I'll go ahead and say it, Jake Fromm at the combine, some other quarterbacks?
Well, and that's an interesting point. I expect Ryan Tannehill to be the starter. I do, whether he's signed long-term or whether he's tagged and they opt to sign Derrick Henry. They've got decisions to make there. And they've been, you know, there's been a lot of question marks around the Titans this offseason. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, they've been very vague about stuff like that, as it is with franchises at this time of year when free agency is kind of on the horizon and you're looking to tag guys. I know the tag window opens up tomorrow. I will not be surprised if that's the route that they go with Tannehill and maybe opt to sign Henry long-term, or maybe it's flip-flop. It's really up in the air right now. And Jake Fromm's an interesting one. You know, Jordan Love from Utah State is one who doesn't get as much attention as some of the guys earlier in this draft. It's obviously an extremely heavy quarterback draft class, but He's a guy that I watched in his bowl game that I probably watched maybe once or twice throughout the season and was always impressed by. Just, and obviously I'm not a scout. My opinion doesn't mean a whole lot when it comes to that, but I've started to see his name floated around a little bit as an athletic guy who can get out of the pocket and throw on the run, has a big arm, all things that the Titans love, things that have been sort of a trend in Titans quarterbacks, at least recently with Ryan Tannehill and Marcus Mariota. So that's a name if you're just thinking about quarterbacks to look out for. But you put up an interesting point with Jake Fromm. I'm really curious to see what happens with him if he doesn't just turn into an Aaron Murray 2.0 almost for Georgia, leaving early. I really thought he would come back and play out his senior year and give himself a chance to get drafted in a class that's not as heavy. So that's going to be definitely one that's interesting to look out for. But, look, I expect Ryan Tannehill to be the starting quarterback for the Titans next year.
Lucas, last thing I will ask you about before we let you go here. So this is something that I know is near and dear to your heart. It is the game of soccer. This Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock local time, Nissan Stadium, Nashville SC makes its MLS debut against Atlanta United. And you already have Nashville SC announcing that they have over 50,000 tickets sold for the inaugural match, and with a lot more expected to be sold by Saturday. Lucas, man, just tell me your own personal excitement and the excitement level around the city for what's going to happen on Saturday.
Man, I can't tell you how excited I am. And the excitement level has really skyrocketed more than I thought it would. And I really think that a lot of it has to do with what I've talked to you guys about in recent weeks with the stadium deal. Coming to the mayor's desk, he didn't sign it. Obviously, all the frustrations that came with that, the deal finally was done with the city of Nashville and the club, and the stadium is planned to be built in 2022. But when all that was happening, Nashville Soccer Club was the talk of the town. For like a solid 2 weeks in Nashville, that was almost the peak conversation point around sports talk, around TV, just you name it, just conversations around Music City. So at the end of the day, I think that really is just going to benefit the club. You saw it surge in ticket sales throughout that period, and just the fact that they might sell out this thing before the opener. Originally, they had only planned to open the lower bowl. That's not more than 30,000 seats, and they had to open up the upper bowl. They announced that a few weeks ago, and now they're past the 50,000 mark. I think it's awesome. The question is, can they sustain it? So what they do on the field against Atlanta United, against a contender in the MLS that has set the bar for expansion sides, what they do on Saturday night is going to be huge going forward. How many fans come out to Columbus Crew? How many fans come out to the DC United game? You know they're going to be there to watch this game on Saturday, but how is it sustained? Depends on what happens in those 90 minutes on Saturday night. But, man, it's surreal that it's actually here. I cannot wait.
Yeah, man, it's sure to be an exciting time this weekend for sure. I'll be keeping my eye on that one. As someone who's not even like an MLS fan, I'll definitely be tuning in just to see the atmosphere out there at Nissan Stadium. Lucas, man, we appreciate you joining us for always. And before you head off, man, tell us what you got going on this week at 1045 The Zone, Vols Wire, and your new soccer writing venture as well.
Sure. Well, with Speedway Soccer that you just mentioned, we recorded our season preview podcast, so it's at Speedway Stock, SOC, on Twitter for any soccer fans that are looking to buy into a home state team, I guess, now that MLS is in Nashville. And I'll be there as well at Nissan Stadium, looking forward to it, covering it for The Zone. And then high school hoops, Tanner, you know, region tournament plays around. Was fun to call a district championship last night as Dixon County beat Franklin. So a lot going on. I love how everything is kind of picking up at the end of February and into March. And then before you know it, it's NCAA tournament time. Not that Tennessee will be there, but
of course,
just having a good time with this soccer thing right now. And as always, appreciate you guys having me on.
Hey, man, you have a good one, Lucas. We appreciate you joining us here. Alrighty, up against it here. We're going to come back, take a quick break, close out hour number one. You're listening to Overtime. Keep it here on Fan Run Radio. All right, final segment of Hour 1 of Overtime. We're brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Be sure to pick you up some Truly. Get you one of the variety packs, 13 different varieties of original Truly. 4 varieties of the new Truly Lemonade as well. 100 calories, less than a gram of sugar. 5% alcohol and gluten-free will not weigh you down. It won't fill you up. Drink what you truly want with a light, refreshing taste of Truly Hard Seltzer. And just because we don't have a lot of time here, I do have enough time to say that happy 8-year anniversary to the great Pete Weber, legendary bowler, when he won the, I think it was like the U.S. Open, he won back in 2012, this day, February 26th. Just the absolute classic moment of him turning to that heckler who had been heckling him and just dropping the GED, just all fired up. That is right! And, of course, looking right at him, thumbs pointing to himself. Who do you think you are? I am. Number five? Are you kidding me? With those glasses and everything. What a legendary moment.
Classic.
I mean, have we ever, like, cared about bowling as much as we did in that moment?
Kingpin. The movie Kingpin.
Okay, how about, like, actual
bowling?
The Big
bowling? Lebowski.
Classic bowling movies. That is
true.
Classic.
Does that make Big Lebowski a sports movie?
Yeah.
Because I've never really thought about that myself. That's my favorite movie, and I've never thought if it's really a sports movie or not.
But we're going to come back with it at the next.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. But, yeah, happy 8-year anniversary, Pete Weber. He's 57 years old. I wonder if he's still bowling. I wonder how long you can just bowl before
forever.
Age catches up with you. Like,
so your back starts hurting?
I guess still professionally at a high level. He won 38 titles on the PBA Tour. Holy crap, 10 majors. Goodness gracious.
Like, he's hit 60. He's out of his bowling prime now. Gonna break a hip.
Tom Brady keep bowling to 65. That's what he chose here. Hey. We were up against it for hour one. Hour two of overtime is coming up after this. Our number, by the way, is 865-546-8200. If you would like to call in and give a shot, we're going to join you back for hour two on the other side.